Wednesday, August, October 17th. It feels like August. October 17th. We're continuing with Yechezkel. We're up to Perek Tes, chapter 9. Although the theme of Yechezkel has been somewhat depressing, and I know last week we ended off with a little bit of a depressing note, but the this parak, this chapter, is a fascinating chapter. It's still somewhat depressing, but it's a fascinating chapter, as you will see as we go along. Parak Tes. Vayikra v'aznai kol gadol lemar. So this is after Yechezkel has seen all of the abominations that were going on in the Beis HaMikdash. And remember, this is a vision. He's actually physically in Babel, in Babylonia. And if you recall, the Yehuda, the elders of Yehuda were sitting before him. And that's when he has this vision. So now that he's gotten this vision and seen all the abominations that are going on in the Beis HaMikdash, Vayikra v'aznai kol gadol lemar, and he called in my ears a great sound, saying, Karvu pikudos ha'ir, bring close the appointed ones of the city. These are the appointed ones to punish the city. These would be like the executioners. They let them come close. V'ish klei mashcheso biyado, and each man should have in his hand his tool of destruction. Whatever he was going to use to destroy the city, those people, these are going to be angels that are charged with the mission of destroying the city, should come forward. And behold, six men came from the way of the upper gate, Asher Mafnet Safona, that is directed to the north. And that should surprise no one, that it comes from the north, as we discussed last week, that that's where the evil, main evil was. V'ish klei mapatzo biyado, and each man had his utensil, his tool of destruction. This would be like something to smash things with. A mapatz would be to break something with it. V'ish echad b'socham, and there was one man in the middle of those six, so this would be a seventh, lavush badim, wearing white. Chazal tell us this man wearing white is the angel Gabriel. V'keses ha-sofer b'masnav, and the I believe a keses is an inkwell. Who has a translation for keses? Keses ha-sofer b'masnav.
It describes tablet,
not the inkwell. Excuse me, right. The tablet that you write on. The slate, right. Thank you. So the scribe's slate was in his belt, in his his clothing. Vayavo vayamdu etzam mizbach hanachoshes, and they came and they stood next to the iron, the copper altar. Now, this should give one pause, because there is no copper altar in the Beis HaMikdash. There was a copper altar in the Mishkan, in the tabernacle, but there is no copper altar in the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech replaced the altar of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe's was made out of copper, but Shlomo needed a much larger Mizbeach, and he replaced it with a stone one. So this is a difficult passage that it means the copper altar. So we'll get back to that. Uchvod Elokei Yisrael Nala Me'al HaKruv, and the honor of the God of Yisrael came up from on top of the kruv of the cherub, Asher Haya Alav, that it had been on it, El Miftan HaBayis, to the Miftan of the house. A Miftan means a stoop, like in front of the house. A stoop in front of the house is called a Miftan. So here, the Shechina, Hashem's presence, which had been on top of the kruv, where is the kruv or the kruvim located? Where are they located? On top of the Aron Kodesh, on top of the Holy Ark. So that's where the Shechina normally resides. And here it rose up from there and came to the Miftan Abayis, to the stoop of the house. And the Chazal tells Rashi, explains, this does not mean the stoop of the Beis HaMikdash, it means the stoop of the Kodesh HaKodashim, of the Holy of Holies. There is no stoop there, but it means it came to the entrance of the Holy of Holies. So the Shechina moved from where it was, which was on top of the Kruvim, to the opening of the Kodesh HaKodashim, of the Holy of Holies. Vayikra El ha'ish halavush habadim, and he called out to the man wearing white, asher keses ha'sofer b'masnav, that the scribe's slate was at his belt. Vayomer Hashem, Elov, and Hashem said to him, Avor v'soch ha'ir, pass through the city, v'soch Yerushalayim, in the middle of Yerushalayim, v'hisvisa tov, and you should write the letter tov, as in Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, tov, the last letter of the alphabet. You should write that letter. It's an interesting thing. V'hisvisa is the verb of the tov, the noun tov. Tov is a noun. It's a letter. It's a noun. The letter A is a noun. So tov is a letter, and so it's a noun. V'hisvisa is the verb of that noun. In Hebrew, you can do that. You can take any noun and turn it into a verb. So you should tov a tov. You should tav a tav, right. But it means you should write a tav. Al mitzchos ha'anashim, on the foreheads of the men, ha'ne'enochim, that are sighing, ve'ha'ne'enochim, and that are sorrowful, al kol ha'toivos, on all of the abominations, ha'nasos b'socha, that are being done in it. So Hashem tells the man who's wearing white, Gabriel, to write... with his scribe's quill, to write the letter Tav on the foreheads of those who are upset over the evil that is going on. Which means, these are the tzaddikim. These are the righteous ones. Put a Tav on their foreheads. Ule'ele amar be'oznai, and to these he said in my ears, to these people, those who are going to destroy the city, Hashem said in my ears, Ivru va'ir acharab, go in the city after him, pass through the city after him, v'haku, and hit, and smite. So meaning, he's going to put a tav on all of the foreheads of those who are righteous, so they shouldn't get hit, and then you should go behind him and strike everybody else. Al tachos einechem, your eyes should not have any pity, v'al tachmolun, don't have any mercy. Zakein, Bachor, Uvesula, an elderly man, a young man, a young woman, Vitaf, Vinashim, children and women, Tahargu, you should kill the Mashchis for destruction. V'al kol ish, asher alav hatav, and on any man that has upon him the tav, al tigashu, don't get close. Umi mikdashi tachelu, and you should begin from my mikdash, from the Beis HaMikdash. And they began with the elderly men that were in front of the bayis, in front of the Beis HaMikdash. Vayomar aleihem, and he said to them, Tam'u es habayis, defile the Beis HaMikdash. By killing people, it's going to become tame. Umal'u es ha'chatziros chalalim tseyu, and fill the courtyards with corpses. Tseyu, go out. V'yatzu, and they went out, v'hiku v'ir, and they struck in the city. V'yikach osam, and it was when they struck the city, v'neshar ani, and I would remain, v'epla al panai, and I fell on my face, v'ezak, and I cried out, v'omar, and I said, aha, Hashem Elokim, whoa, Hashem God, ha'mashchis ata, is kol she'eres Yisrael, will you destroy all of the remnant of Israel? Bishaf kecha es chamascha Yerushalayim, when you pour out your wrath on Jerusalem. Vayomer Eli, and he said to me, Avon beis Yisrael v'Yehuda gadol b'mod ma'od. The sins of the house of Israel and Yehuda is very, very great. Vatimalei haaretz damim, and the land has been filled up with blood. V'ha'ir mala muteh, and the city is filled with muteh, which means with judgment that has been what? Perverted, thank you. Perverted judgment, thank you. Turned. He amru, for they said, Azam Hashem is hearts, Hashem has forsaken the land. Vein Hashem roh, Hashem doesn't see. V'gamani lo sachos eini, and also I, my eyes will not have mercy. V'lo echmol, I want to pity. Darkam b'ro Hashem nasati, their ways on their heads I have put. Now I'm repaying them for their deeds. V'nei o'ish lavush habadim, and behold the man wearing white, asher akeses b'masnav, that the slate was in his belt, may shivdava lema, returned the thing saying, Asisi kasha tzivisani, I did what you said, which means I put a tav on the foreheads of all those who needed the tav. And that's the end of Parak Tes. Parak Yud, next week, will continue what's happening. The story is we're stopping in the middle of the story over here at the end of the parak so that we can get our bearings here and understand what is going on. So, to sum it up, after Yechezkel has shown all the abominations that we learned about last week, and they're pretty bad, then Hashem says, calls out to six people, angels, to come forward with their tools of destruction to destroy the city. Before he does that, he tells the man wearing white, which is Gabriel, to go and write a tav on the foreheads of all those who are righteous. And I'm just checking to make sure that it really is Gabriel. So it's Gabriel? Okay, good. Thank you. No, that's also good. Okay, good. Good. We're going to have next week, you'll see, we're going to be dealing with Gabriel and Michael, which is, I want to make sure we have the right one over here. So he tells them to go put a tub on the foreheads of all those who are righteous. And then he sends the six to go destroy the city and to skip the those who have the tub. They begin from the Beis HaMikdash and they destroy everything. And where they're supposed to destroy everything, as he tells them to do. And he says, go out, and they go out. Yechezkel remains alone, and he cries out to Hashem, you're going to destroy all the Jews? And Hashem says, they deserve it. What do you want me to do? And then the man comes back, Gabriel comes back and says, I did what you told me to do. So, there are several questions which I'll ask, and maybe you'll add some questions. But the points that need clarification here are that what is this tav that's being put on their foreheads? That's number one. Why the letter tav? Why not the letter aleph, beis? What's with the tav? Okay? Tahar would be the test.
No,
Torah. Oh, Torah.
Because the letter tav, and the tav starts with the ratios and the tav, so maybe the tav.
Okay. Everybody thought the same thing? Torah? That's interesting. Teshuva? Okay. Okay, that's good. So that's a possibility. So we need to discuss that a little bit. And then, what is Yechezkel so upset about? If the tzaddikim are not being killed, they're being saved. It's only the evil ones who are being killed. And what does it mean when he says, you're going to destroy all the house of Israel? He's not destroying all the house of Israel. He's saving the tzaddikim. So what is happening over here? What is Yechezkel so upset about? And this last point, we will see what happens next week. But as we've mentioned before in Yechezkel, when he gets these visions, this is not happening as he is seeing it. He is seeing a premonition of what is going to happen. But it hasn't happened yet. When he gets this vision, it's obviously for a purpose. Why would he get the nevuah? Now we mentioned, in other times we've asked a similar question, that he gets the nevuah partially for our sake, so we can learn from what he sees, but also for their sake. Because when he gets the nevuah of destruction, then he is able to do something about it. And what does he do about it? He davens. When he says, Aha, Hashem Elohim, whoa, Hashem God, he's davening. He's saying to Hashem, how can you do such a thing? We will see next week what it is that his davening accomplished. We know that his davening did not save the Beis HaMikdash from being destroyed. But it did accomplish something, and that's important to bear in mind, and we will see that next week when we talk about what happens next week. A lot of what we see in Yechezkel is that tefillah, the prayer, always has an effect, even if it may not be the effect that we want, but something always happens good because of davening. We will see that next week. Yeah? Tahara. Tahara literally means purity. But the process for the dead is cleansing them. Yeah. But tahara is with a test. So it would have to be different. There may be some elements of tahara here, but it wouldn't. The tug would not be the thing that would teach us that. Tichya, to live. Okay, that's possible.
I'm puzzled and bothered that it was only men that had the tuff put on, and it says destroy all the
Right.
Women and the children and all the other bad men of women, there was no possibility of righteous women.
Of the righteous women. You are aware that the Torah frequently uses men as a catch-all for everybody.
Yeah, but here it's spelled out.
So it's,
women and children.
Right. So it's spelled it out with destruction, because that's trying to bring out the point that there was no mercy. Normally you would have mercy on the children, on the women, etc. And here there was no mercy at all. But with the tav, it's not necessary to spell it out. There you take men to mean the general populace.
Okay.
And there would be anybody who was righteous who would be included in that. There's a question here, yeah.
I have a problem. Hashem said that they put it on the forehead, and then he said, you know, kill everybody else. If you're not supposed to have mercy, it would be easier, for example, if Hashem put it on the back, so you don't see the people's eyes, you don't see their face, you don't recognize them. When it's on their forehead, you're looking at them, you're looking at their eyes before you kill them. That makes it harder to accomplish.
The tav was on those who were righteous, who would not be killed.
But you have to look on the forehead of everybody to see if the tav is there or not.
Oh, I see.
To get their face before you kill them.
Well,
if it was marked like an essence all around them,
okay.
Then you don't have
You think it was harder not to have mercy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, these are angels who are doing the killing. You know, again, this
well, then why even say about mercy?
Yeah.
Because if they can't have mercy,
yeah.
Why not just say, just kill everybody
right.
without a thought?
So the angel, in reality, who actually did the killing? It wasn't angels. In reality, 5 years later, it was the custom, the Babylonians who did it. That's the ones who actually did it. But this is meant to foreshadow what's going to happen, that they are not going to have any mercy. Just as the angels are being told not to have mercy, and of course the angels have to listen, the Babylonians won't either. And that was the message to Yechezkel. That's what's going to be happening in the future. So, what you're saying even accentuates that. That even though they're looking, they're still not going to be interested.
Of
course. Right. Yeah.
What's the point of the Shekhinah moving?
Right? That's okay. We're about to speak about that. Very good. That's the next thing we'll mention. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just reading in here that the righteous had his tongue put on in ink and the others in blood.
Yes. Yeah. There is a medrash, and really the Gemara mentions it, Tosfos mentions it as well, that, as Mrs. Stein said, that the Tav would stand for either Tichya, to live, or Tamos, or to die. You will live or you will die. And then the ones who were to live got the Tav in ink, and the ones who were to die got the Tav in blood. But but Tosfos points out in the Gemara that medrash is maybe true, but the pasuk is not talking about the tav of blood, because the pasuk is talking about the tav that protects the tzaddikim, not the tav that destroys the evil ones. So even though that may have happened, but that's not what the simple meaning of the verse is. The simple meaning is the tav went on, we're talking about the tav that went on the foreheads of the righteous.
Was it the merit of the patriarch that you
said? Yeah. Okay. That's another explanation that the Gemara says for the tav, that is the tav either means tamas chus avos, that the merits have been depleted, or tana, tama, or I forgot the word. I'm sorry. Another word that begins with a tav. That means that the righteousness, the merit of the patriarchs should be used now, should come into play now to save them. So we're going to get to this. We're going to get to these different. Yeah.
I was thinking about this issue of the women not being included, and of course they can be included when we're just talking about population.
Right.
But it's also true. It says that the sign was put on the forest of man who sigh and groan for all the abominations. But last week, we heard that the women who are usually called upon to
very good.
Some way elevate their families or to give good advice to their husbands.
Or to use their tears in a positive way.
Right.
Right. But that wasn't all the women. That was the evil women. There were righteous women who were using their tears properly. And they would also be included in this list of those who would get the tough. Yeah. Yeah, just one more? Yeah. Yeah.
Unless it's in a generation, the sin right. that go back and the children punish the generation,
and
the elders. But maybe women
should not be scared. Right. So here, since it was on everybody, the punishment was on the whole people. There was no mercy. That's right. It was a very sad case. So, what is this? Before we answer these questions, right beforehand, Yechezkel sees the honor of Hashem rise up from on top of the kruv and move to the miftar habayis, to the stoop of the house, to the entrance to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So what is that? Now, we are going to see several references in Yechezkel to the movement of the Shekhinah, of Hashem's divine presence. Now, we know that when the Beis HaMikdash is built and things are working properly, Hashem's Shekhinah, His divine presence, resides on top of the Kruvim, on top of the cherubs that are on top of the Aron, on top of the Ark. And that's where Hashem's heavenly voice came out when it spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe would get spoken to by Hashem after the Mishkan was built, he would enter the Mishkan, and the way Rashi describes it is that Hashem's heavenly voice would come down from the heavens to the Kruvim, to where the cherubs are, and then from there go out into the rest of the Mishkan and go into Moshe's ears. But that's where it would emanate from right over there. So that is considered to be, when Hashem says, I will reside in the Beis HaMikdash, that's where He's residing.
Moshe
is long gone, over here.
Why did you say that?
I'm just showing...
Down long ago, yeah. Where was He standing, anyway?
When He was in the Mishkan, when He was in the Tabernacle, to get the prophecy from Hashem, He would, in the desert, He would enter into the Tabernacle. He was able to go in, not into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, not into the Holy of Holies, but go into the Kodesh, to the just the Holy, and there would be a curtain. There'd be a curtain between ostensibly he didn't. There'd be a curtain between that and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Here's the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Ark and the cherubs on top. The voice would come down to where the cherubs are, and then go out to where Moshe was standing, and he would receive the prophecy. Aaron would actually go into where the Aaron was. He would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. On Yom Kippur, right.
So, the Kruvim, God's voice came to Aaron's house.
No, God didn't speak to Aaron. Not from the Kruvim. That was only to Moshe. Not in that way. Right. Yeah. Now that's considered to be where the Shekhinah rests when we have a Beis HaMikdash. We're going to see that the Shekhinah progressively moves away. This is the first movement of 10 that the Shekhinah does. It goes from the top of the Kruvim to the doorway of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We will find later it's going to move from the doorway of the Kodesh HaKadoshim to the entrance of the Kodesh. And then it will progressively move. It'll go, keep going. Then it'll move to the courtyard. It'll move out of the Beis HaMikdash entirely. It'll move up to the mountains. Eventually, it will be gone completely from Eretz Yisrael. There are 10 separate movements that it does. We're not going to see every single one in the Pesukim, but Chazal tells us there were 10 distinct movements of the Shekhinah. This is because the Beis HaMikdash cannot be destroyed as long as the Shekhinah is there. You see, as long as Hashem resides in the Beis HaMikdash, anybody who wants to can try to knock it down. They can use sledgehammers, they can use bulldozers, they can use explosives. They would never be able to destroy the Beis HaMikdash because nothing can destroy what Hashem's Shekhinah is within. Hashem's Shekhinah gives it an otherworldly existence, and nothing can happen to it. We know that the Aron, the Ark, did not take up any space in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This is one of the miracles that took place in the Beis HaMikdash. It's a relatively well-known miracle, and that is that if you would measure the dimensions of the Kodesh HaKadoshim of the Holy of Holies, we will use, for this particular discussion, we'll use the measurements of the Mishkan, but the Kodesh HaKadoshim of the Mishkan was 10 Amos by 10 Amos. So if you would measure from wall to wall, you would get 10 Amos. Then if you would measure from the wall to the Aron, it would measure 5 Amos. And then go to the other side of the Aron and measure from the Aron to the wall, you get 5 Amos. Well, 5 and 5 is 10. So where's the Aron? The Aron didn't take up space. It defied laws of matter. It would not take up space. That was one of the regular miracles that took place in the Beis HaMikdash. That's because it had a different existence. As long as the Shekhinah was there, then it was in this world, but not in this world at the same time. You could see it, you could touch it, but you couldn't measure it. It wasn't here. In some way, it had a spiritual dimension. Hashem wants the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. That can't happen as long as he's there. So what we see is a progression of him moving away from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then from the Kodesh, and then from the Beis HaMikdash, and then from Yerushalayim, and then from the mountains. He moves further and further away. Once Hashem's Shekhinah takes that tenth step away completely, that's when the enemy swarms upon Yerushalayim and is able to destroy it and the Beis HaMikdash. This is actually a chesed. That's a kindness that Hashem did. Because what Hashem managed to, what he allowed to happen, is that there was going to be destruction. Had he not moved out of the Beis HaMikdash, then the Beis HaMikdash could not be destroyed. Then all of the destruction would have to be felt or have to be directed at the Jewish people. But instead, by moving out of the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem allows part of the blow of the destruction to land on the Eitzim Va'avanim, on the wood and the stones of the Beis HaMikdash. And by doing so, it prevents some of the destruction from hitting the Jewish people themselves. So although a lot of people did die, and there was a tremendous amount of suffering, but we survived. We continue to this day. Because Hashem allowed some of the brunt to be taken out on the structure of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's because he removed his Shekhinah. This is the first step. And Yechezkel is witness to it. Obviously, that's meant to be a warning. It's a wake-up call. The Shekhinah is starting to move out of the Beis HaMikdash. And it's also telling Yechezkel that he's going to continue to move out so that this destruction can take place. So we will, as we go through and we see other times that the Shekhinah moves, we'll reference back to here as the first one, then we'll see later the second, the third, etc., and we'll try to point them out as we go along. And you'll notice them as we see them. Yes?
The Hezekiel already knows there's going to be this destruction, but the Jewish people could have changed all along.
No, they could have changed. This was a foreshadowing of what would happen if they would not change. They ended up not changing. So they were punished. Although, as we will show next week, it's not going to be as bad as is described here because of Yechezkel's prayer.
But when God hardened Pharaoh's heart, he couldn't turn. It's almost like he's doing this
no.
Also Jewish people have sinned so much that
Pharaoh had no choice. Paro, at that point, when Hashem hardened his heart, he was finished. Here, Hashem gives the people a choice.
Clear?
Yeah. This is not... Hashem never takes away the free will from us to do teshuva. He takes away the free will from the Goyim because he knows that they're not going to do real teshuva anyway. So, here, he now tells Gabriel to go and put the tuff on their foreheads, and then he sends out the six to make the destruction. Chazal tell us the following thing. In Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Zakein Bachur Vesuva Vetaf Noshim Targu Lamashchis, all the different types of people you should destroy. Valkol Isha She'alav Atav Al Tigashu, anybody who's on their forehead was a Tav, you should not get close. Umi Mikdashi Tachelu, and you should begin from my Beis HaMikdash. Chazal tell us, don't read this word Umi Mikdashi, and from my Mikdash, which means the Beis HaMikdash, rather, Umi Mekudashi, and from those who are holy, you should start. Which means that although he just told them, put a tav on their foreheads of the righteous, so that they should not be destroyed, Hashem then turns around and tells the destructive angels, start with the holy ones. Start with the ones with a tav on their forehead. Kill them first. Vayachilu va'anashim azekenim asher lifnei habayis, and they began with the elders that were in front of the Beis HaMikdash. The righteous elders that were in front of the Beis HaMikdash were the first ones to receive the blows of the angels. This is why Yechezkel then turns around and says, Aha, Hashem Elohim, whoa, Hashem God, how can you destroy everybody? Because everybody was in fact being destroyed. Even the righteous ones, who were initially supposed to be protected, were being destroyed. Now why should that be? Why would Hashem do that? He first says, put a tav on their foreheads, and then says, destroy them. How do we understand that? So the Gemara says as follows. This is what happened. Hashem said, put a tav on their foreheads to protect them. And then the others will go out and destroy the people who don't have a tav, or who have a tav in blood, whichever way you want to say. The Midas Hadin, Hashem's attribute of judgment, then speaks up. Now, bear in mind that Hashem has no parts. When we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hashem is one. Hashem is one has two meanings, and they're both true. Obviously, it means there is no other God. And that's the simple meaning. But there's another aspect to Hashem Echad, Hashem is one, and that is that He has no parts, He has no pieces. There aren't sides of Hashem. We have different parts to us, physically and emotionally. We have a hand, a face, and we have feet, etc. We have different parts of our body. Emotionally, we have different sides to us, and sometimes we'll show one emotion, another emotion, and sometimes we can have inner conflict between our emotions. I'm angry, but I'm trying to control myself. I'm excited, but I'm also sad about something else at the same time. And I can have a conflict of emotions and not be sure what to display when. That's a human being. Hashem has no such weakness. Hashem is one, one uniform whole. There is no parts, there are no parts, there are no separate entities. So when the Gemara says that Hashem's attribute of mercy speaks up, or Hashem's attribute of judgment speaks up, or whatever thing like that you see or ever hear about, it is all meant to be said in a way that we can understand it. Just like when it says, Hashem's outstretched arm. Hashem has no arm. What do you mean, outstretched arm? He doesn't have one. But that's meant to give us something that we can understand based on what a human being would do in such a circumstance. So therefore it says, outstretched arm. Here as well, the Gemara is trying to show us, if it would have been a king who is flesh and blood, this would have been the internal struggle that he would have had. Of course, for Hashem, there was no internal struggle, and this was all one straight thing. We have to explain why it happened in steps. But first, let's say what happened. The Midas Hadin, the attribute of judgment, said to Hashem, why should you save these, and why should you kill those? You should kill them all. And Hashem says back to the Midas Hadin, to the attribute of judgment, what do you mean? These are Tzadikim Gemurim. They're totally righteous. And these are Rishayim Gemurim. They're totally evil. So of course I should kill them and not them. So the Midas Hadin says to Hashem, no, you should kill the Tzadikim as well. Why? Because they could have rebuked Hayulahan Limchos. They should have rebuked those who were evil, and they didn't. And therefore, by the fact that they remain quiet, they are guilty as well of the same sins, and they should be killed as well. Hashem said back to the Midas Hadin, Hashem says back to the attribute of judgment, but if they would have rebuked the evil ones, it is galui v'yadua, it is revealed and known to me, that the evil ones wouldn't have listened. They could have begged, pleaded, yelled, punished, whatever they wanted, the righteous to the evil ones never would have listened. They were hardened, and I know they would not have listened to the righteous ones. So what are you blaming the righteous ones for? They couldn't have done anything about it anyway. The Midas Hadin, the attribute of judgment, says back to Hashem, it's galui v'yadua, it's revealed and known to you, but it wasn't galui v'yadua to them. They didn't know that the evil ones wouldn't listen, and yet they kept quiet. And therefore, they are just as guilty as the evil ones themselves. That argument, so to speak, won over Hashem, And he turned around and said, "You're right, kill the righteous ones as well." He started with them, that's true. That could be a bracha. Starting with them could be a blessing. So they don't see everything else. Yeah, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But, yeah, starting with them. Now again, Hashem didn't have any struggle. The Gemara is bringing out to us what would have been the debate had it been a court case. If it would have been a judgment, a court case in heaven, these would have been the opposing sides. These would have been the defender and the prosecutor. It would have gone back and forth, and Hashem would have ended up with the prosecution, unfortunately, because of that winning argument. Now, we have to understand then two things. Maybe more than that, but at least two things. One, we have to understand what is this guilt in not admonishing the wicked. We are faced with people who don't know about Torah, don't keep the Torah, or maybe know about Torah and still decide not to all the time. We don't even discuss people who are not within our community. Even within our community, people always do things wrong. Who can stand up and say they never do anything wrong? We all do things wrong, unfortunately. And we all witness the people doing things wrong. How frequently do we admonish each other? I would say pretty infrequently. How do we understand this guilt in the lack of admonishment? And what does that mean for us? Does that mean that we need to be start admonishing people right and left? Do we have to be critical all the time? Is that what's being taught over here? Clearly, that would be a very difficult way to exist. But is that what's being expected of us? If you're a tzaddik. Okay, good answer. That's a good answer. So we'll get to that. Good. That's one thing that has to be understood. The other thing that has to be understood is this. So I explained the Gemara is just bringing out what happened as if it were a court case. Okay. But really, for Hashem, there was no internal struggle. Fine. But if there was no internal struggle with Hashem, why does he first say, put a tav on the foreheads, and then he turns around and says, kill them? Why do it that way? Why not just say, kill them? What is this business of making... I understand he didn't vacillate. Hashem didn't. But it seems from his orders that there's some confusion over here. Obviously, Hashem wants the confusion, as we've pointed out many times. When the angels do things, it's because that's what Hashem wants them to do. So Hashem deliberately set in motion conflicting orders. First put the tav on their foreheads, then destroy them. And there must be something that we derive from that confusion. So that's something else which we need to understand.
Yeah. They had the ability to do better, but they didn't.
Correct. And therefore?
That was a mark.
It was for them. It was for them to realize it there.
Okay, but they didn't see that. Well, okay. This is a vision that Yechezkel has seen. They didn't actually see a tav on their foreheads.
They didn't see it on each other?
There was no actual... This vision... because this vision is 5 years before the destruction. At the time of the destruction, there was nothing... There were no actual tubs put on their foreheads. So...
Okay, so what is that like with Noah? The people could have said, okay. Noah, make it so the others could have said, you know, you have something on your forehead. What does that mean?
Right, but there was nothing on their foreheads over here.
Yeah.
It's a vision that he's seeing. But you're correct. I don't want to take it away. You are correct. Because if that's the vision... And you just have to take it one more step. If that's the vision, that means that Hezkel is being shown that there is going to be some indication. It won't have to be a tav written on their foreheads, which would look pretty strange, but there will be some way that it will be clear, and the righteous should know about it. So that's very good. So we'll follow up on that.
Isn't that what's saying to Yehezkel, look, these people have 5 years, or they will also be destroyed. But the other people, they're kind of going down a path that I don't think they're going to come back from, right? Because it's been shown to me that even if they will rebuke, they won't do it. But that is really the 5-year warning for the righteous.
Right, correct. In the end, it becomes a 5-year warning for the righteous, because since the other ones aren't going to do the teshuva anyway, it's a 5-year warning for the righteous. But let's point out that a warning to the righteous still can help the wicked. Even if the wicked aren't going to listen to rebuke, but we're all connected. And when the righteous improve, that helps the wicked as well. So they may not listen to outright rebuke, but they still could be saved because of the righteousness of the righteous, or they may improve themselves because the righteous do better. All Hashem is saying is, I know they are not; they would not have listened to any rebuke. But that doesn't mean that they would not have improved if they would have seen better examples. That they might have improved from. So it's just the rebuke that Hashem is saying they wouldn't listen to. Yeah?
Well, one of the parts when you talked about going walk the sun on the hearts of them who sigh and moan, maybe they never moan. In other words, he's telling them to go ahead, right?
And they got to toughen their foreheads.
Right.
He put toughness, that means that these are the people that fit the criteria that Hashem said.
Oh, so they got the tough for sure.
Right. And then he still tells them to go and destroy them. Yeah.
So,
I think we all are.
So they weren't killed right away, so the Malachim smote them 5 years and they came.
In the vision, right, they were smitten right away.
Okay.
The vision, the tough was put on their foreheads. Right. And then Hashem said, kill them anyway, and they were killed. In the vision, he's seeing this all happening. But in reality, nothing happened for 5 years.
And it was the Babylonians who actually did it.
Right. Right. Okay. Right. This is all foreshadowing what's going to happen later. Right.
So the word says a signing and moaning. It says
that was in Pasuk.
Right. I'm number 4 there, but. Dalit. Is there an indication that they weren't anything but signing and moaning? It doesn't show any action on
it. No. Signing and moaning was a good thing. That means that they were upset over. Well, they weren't rebuking. They were upset over all the evil that was going on. That's what it means, signing and moaning.
And I just want to ask, I heard it said that when the righteous are, when you see a disaster coming, the righteous sometimes are supposed to pick themselves up and get out.
I never heard such a thing. I never heard that. Never heard that. Yeah.
No, I thought that the people are taken out.
Okay, this we mentioned last week that there are. No, that's right. That there are, that the leadership was taken out. But there still are righteous people. But you're right. The leadership and the Nevi'im, they're all mostly out. That's true. That's 100% true. Including Yechezkel. So what is being said over here about rebuke and about admonishment?
Well, he's just teaching him to God.
That could be. Well, the vision for sure is. I mean, that's what he's seeing.
Oh. Yeah. The lesson all of us.
I'm teaching the lesson of right to not. Not to take the time to go after people. We did the paper. Hashem gave 127 years to build it.
And 120.
And he didn't go out to get the people to the church. So there must be some connection with
it. The Tysus asked a question. Tysus says that we know that there are other Gemaras that say that if you know that the people who are doing the evil are not going to listen to you, then you should not rebuke them. Because mutav shiyu shogegin v'alyu mezidin. Sometimes it's better that a person should be sinning and it's a shogeg. It's not a rebellion. It's not deliberate. They don't know better, or they're not, or they, shogeg is not knowing better. Shogeg is really not thinking too clearly, choosing to turn their heads away. It's not an overt rebellion against Hashem. But if you go and you wag your finger at them and they say, forget it, now they're going to do this sin with complete intent to rebel. And you've made it worse. By rebuking them, you've made it worse. So the Gemara says, in that sort of situation, keep your mouth closed. There's no advantage in rebuke if you're only going to harden them and make it worse. So Tysus asks, how can they be held accountable for not rebuking when you see the Gemara says that they're not going to listen, don't rebuke? But Tysus answers, I'll get the question in a minute, Tysus answers, that's only, like the Gemara is saying here, when you know they won't listen. But if you don't know that they won't listen, then you have to try. Still have a question?
Well, at the beginning, Yechezkel didn't want to give over this rebuke.
Right.
So we think Hashem was also rebuking
good.
Yechezkel at the same
good.
Time.
Very good.
Good. One of those righteous ones that would have been
spoke first. Excellent. See, I like that. It means that you remember something from several months ago. So I like that. Very good. Excellent. So already we're being taught that rebuke, tochacha, admonishment, should not be given when you know the person is not going to listen. that's really the bottom line when it comes to rebuke today. Why do we walk around and criticize people? Or why is it that if we do see people criticizing others, we criticize those who are criticizing? We tell them, don't do it. You're not helping the situation. We're constantly telling others that you need to take it easy. You need to be softer. Don't criticize all the time. Don't be so quick to rebuke. Because most of the time today, in our day and age, rebuke does not work. If anything, it makes the situation worse. And that's for two reasons. It's because of the one who is performing the sin and the one who is doing the rebuking. You see, in order for telchacha, for rebuke to work properly, you need a person who is hearing the rebuke to have the capacity to accept it. And in previous generations, when the world wasn't as rebellious as it is today, we see rebellion all the time. We know children rebel, teenagers rebel, people are not interested in being told what to do. It wasn't like that 100 years ago, 200 years ago. The world was a different place. There was a lot less rebellion. A lot more people knew their place. People didn't stand on principle. People were told from their superiors what to do, and they just did it because they were being told what to do. There was a lot greater capacity for people to listen to others. They may not have liked it, but there was, when they were rebuked, there was an acceptance of sorts. Today, there's an incredible air of rebellion in the world. We see it. Teenagers is probably the best example, but you see it all the time. Nobody wants to be told what to do. Nobody. Nobody. When a rabbi delivers a sermon in shul, it's always soft. You notice that? It's always with love. It's always to be helpful, to try to encourage people. It's never, you shouldn't be doing it. It's never like that, because you all know what the reaction would be. Everybody would stand up and walk out, or they would stone him or throw him, whatever it is. He would lose his job. That would be pointless for a rabbi to do that. But that's not so 200 years ago. Rabbis did that all the time, and they were loved and accepted, and they were revered because people wanted the rebuke. People were looking for rebuke because that's how they improved themselves. But that's not what goes on in the world today, and that's not by accident. It's not just that it happens to be this way. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Sota that before Mashiach comes, chutzpah yaskin. There will be an incredible amount of chutzpah in the world. Chutzpah will balloon, the amount of chutzpah will be in the world. The capacity for a person to rebel and to be disrespectful and to not accept rebuke will become magnified. And that's where we are today. And so, telchacha, rebuke, doesn't work so easily today because of those listening to the rebuke, which is all of us whenever we sin. But in addition to that, there's also a chisaron, a lack, in those delivering the rebuke, the admonishment. Because, as Mr. Fruchtman pointed out, that it's one thing if you or yourself, if we ourselves are righteous. If we ourselves are righteous, if someone who is unquestionably a righteous, pious person says to me, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. What you're doing is wrong. I may not like being told that, but it's hard for me to argue. Because the person is completely righteous and pious. And therefore, what am I going to do? I mean, they are doing what's right, and they're telling me to do what's right. Fine. But today, when someone wags his finger at me and says, "Ooh, you know what you're doing wrong?" I can turn around and say, "Well, you know what you're doing wrong?" Right? Nobody today is free from that stain. And therefore, nobody can get up and admonish other people because they're not pure themselves. As pure and righteous, as pious as our leaders are, and they are, and they're certainly much more righteous and pious than we are, but nevertheless, nobody is completely clean. And therefore, it's much harder to deliver rebuke, because as sincere as you may be, but the person receiving the rebuke can find it insincere because, hey, you aren't so good yourself. I was going to give you an example. I'll give you a quick example. I've been talking a lot about, anyway, I wanted to mention this. I've been talking a lot about the reflective sashes they're giving out on Friday night. And I've been pushing it throughout the community. It's been a big thing. Last year I pushed it, and I'm very, very excited that it's going to be happening this Friday night. So, you know, I've been talking about it. I talk about it to the RE Straw Boys whenever I have a chance, to the Buckram whenever I have a chance. So, somebody pointed out to me, a member of the community pointed out to me that last night when I was walking to the crime meeting, and I was walking at dusk, and I usually carry my flashlight, and I didn't have it with me. And I was wearing my dark suit, and I was walking, and they were 100% right. In fact, when I was walking, I realized I forgot my flashlight, and it was too late for me to go back for it. But there, you know, so who am I to go tell people to be careful? And I'm not being careful myself, right? And I'm talking about it all the time. So, but we're not perfect. We're not perfect. It's hard to give rebuke when you're not perfect yourself. So that is why we're not expected to constantly rebuke people. However, we do see from here the importance of tochacha. Rebuke is an important thing, to the point where these tzaddikim were punished because they didn't give rebuke when they could have. Which means that even though it is true that the default today is that when I see somebody sinning, it is highly, highly unlikely that I'm going to be able to rebuke them. Unless I have a previous relationship, we know each other well, and I can do it in a way that's not demeaning, etc. It's highly unlikely that I can rebuke anybody for anything today. And therefore I'm not going to be held accountable for not rebuking. But because you see how important it is, therefore, it does mean that we do have to be chachamim. We have to be wise. We have to use our intellect to try to find ways of rebuking in a positive manner. That if we are able to be effective, which means not to wag our fingers, but if we are able, we see someone who's doing something wrong, and perhaps they don't know better, perhaps they just forgot. If we have a way of being able to get into a conversation with them, being able to show them that we're only after their good, we have no interest in just putting them down, etc. And we'd like very much for them to do well because we're concerned for their well-being, we're concerned for their olam haba, for their future. If we can give that over, then we have to. And then we have to try to help them to do better. Because rebuke is important, and it's something which we have a responsibility to our fellow Jews to do. Very often, in order to give that sort of positive rebuke, it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of thought. But you see the importance of putting in that time, effort, and thought. Because rebuke really is important. And so, we do see from here the importance of trying our best to be effective when possible. And although that when possible is not that often, but it's not like it never happens. There are times when each and every one of us does have the capacity to be able to help someone improve if we would put some more thought, effort, and time into it. And so that we do see from here. Just before we run out of time, why did Hashem present it in this way? If Hashem knew all along what he was going to do, he was going to have the righteous destroyed because they didn't rebuke. So why did he go through the effort of putting the top on their foreheads and then destroying them? So what's the answer? What's that? Well, this seems to be instantaneous. Put the top on and then destroy them. Well, these. What's that? Tokacha. Okay, good. The simple answer to the question is clear, because that's how we know this whole lesson. If Hashem would have done that, Hashem would have just said, destroy everybody, then we would have just said, well, when it's time to destroy, Hashem destroys both the righteous and the evil at the same time. That Hashem, when it's time for destruction, then unfortunately everybody gets swept into it. That's what we would have said. But Hashem wanted to point out that really they could have been saved. They were on the verge of being saved. But there was a flaw. And that flaw was that they didn't rebuke. In fact, the way the Gemara says it is that they got the tub on their foreheads for being perfect tzaddikim. But when the attribute of judgment pointed out that they didn't rebuke, then clearly they were not perfect tzaddikim. Because a perfect tzaddik would have fulfilled this mitzvah of rebuke as well. And so, first they get the tov to show us that they were just about perfect, but then The tav does not help them because there was a flaw. And so that is pointed out. But I have to tell you to wait till next week, because next week we will see that Yechezkel's tefillah does help in some measure, and that will be Perek Yud, Mitzvah Hashem, next week.